Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club. It's your one-stop shop for football betting insight. Yes, so much to cover in this week's edition. We've got the African Cup of Nations coming up. We'll be getting Mark's thoughts on that. Of course, some Premier League fixtures to preview and a look back on the EFL Cup first leg semi-finals, where there were some talking points, that's for sure. Mark, how are things? Are we settling into 2024 nicely?
I'm one of them people, Jack, that just, you know, it's, you know, January 1st is another day, and then you just sort of carry on, really, from what you're doing in December. So, I absolutely love this, the weather at the moment. I know most people detest the cold, but, you know, one of life's great joys, I think, is a walk through London in a crisp, cold morning, you know, when the sun's out. So, yeah, I really, really enjoy it.
And I see you're joining us from your mansion. Is that the library you're talking to us from today?
Racing Post Towers. We're in the room which stores all of the form books going back many a year. I mean, there's probably there's probably Shergar and all sorts, I would have thought, in some of these form books. Yeah, they go back a while. It's a more impressive backdrop than usual. If I'm usually in my house, where you might get a bit of the kids washing sort of dangling around somewhere. So no, this is a slightly more professional approach.
Yeah, puts mine to shame. The disappointment of no Amazon delivery drivers ringing on the doorbell today, though. Mark, it's of course been a couple of semi-finals to distract us from everything else this week. It started with Middlesbrough against Chelsea. A bit of an upset. Middlesbrough winning the first leg. I mean, it wasn't for Chelsea not creating chances. I think Mr. Palmer had been described as cold Palmer by some of his colleagues in recent weeks, and he certainly did go cold in front of goal, and not for all the right reasons.
I thought you were talking about our colleague Steve Palmer and his shed, and how cold he might be at the moment. Yeah, I mean, obviously Cole Palmer has been one of he's been probably the brightest spark, hasn't he, for Chelsea this season, and one of the few signings that, if anything, has sort of values gone up since they bought him. Wasn't to be, he had the chances, he missed the chances. I don't want to put the boot too much into Palmer, because he's somebody that, like I say, has sort of been the shining light for Chelsea this season, but does highlight, I think, the lack of sort of killer instinct that they've got up front. And Chelsea have created a lot of chances this season and not taken them. Obviously, Nicholas Jackson is now away at AFCON. He's been the main culprit of those missed opportunities. And you're just waiting for Nkunku to get fit to see whether he is the answer. But, you know, no sooner did he sort of get back into the side, he's sort of, you know, they're sort of just fallen away again, and that they need to be careful with him. I don't think there's anything that we didn't know already really about Chelsea, from the point of view that they are going to need to buy a striker. It feels ridiculous given how much money they've spent in the Todd Boehly era. But if you don't have somebody that can take those chances, and we'll get on to Liverpool slightly later and sort of all of the firepower that they've got, if you don't have somebody that can sort of take the chances, really, all of your other work just, it's not completely inconsequential, but it doesn't half help if you've got somebody up front that can just even score at a normal rate, you know, sort of roughly in keeping with their XG. They've not got to be Heung-Min Son or whatever and sort of outshoot their XG by 5, 6, 7 every season, but just have a normal sort of striker up front. Maybe it's Victor Osimhen, but you know, somebody big like that's going to have to be in the summer, I would have thought. It'd be very difficult to do in January, so they might have to just sit it out.
I feel like your take on football, Mark, is one of patience and compassion, and I felt that towards Chelsea. On here, in your personal life, your opinions might be slightly different.
But... Oh, yeah. I mean, I want Middlesbrough to win and to stuff Poch, and, you know, I mean, it'd be absolutely heartbreaking if he wins his first trophy in England with them.
There must be a, you know, certainly at the start of this season and after Chelsea's poor start, you were kind of saying, you know, this is a long-term vision and the results will start to come. But the fact we're talking about that they still need more firepower despite the money they've spent, like, surely that's just reckless in the transfer market, isn't it?
It is, yeah. That they well, they have been reckless
That's what I
in the
mean, yeah.
market. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But Jackson, I suppose if he would have scored a like I say a normal normal rate, then we wouldn't probably be having this discussion. You might even be saying, "Oh wow, you know what a signing he's been." Maybe it's a bit too soon for him, and he's somebody that's going to, need a little bit of time to settle and will become. A kind of elite marksman sort of later on in his career because he is still young and it come to him relatively quickly. It wasn't that long ago. He's been linked with a move to Bournemouth. So I don't want to, again, a bit like Palmer, I don't want to just stick the boot into these players. And if Nkunku was fit, we might not even be having this discussion. But the simple fact is that if Chelsea don't bring in a striker at some stage, I don't see them getting to where they want to be and where you expect Chelsea to be. And that's not losing a semi-final of a League Cup to a Championship team. And probably is just worth giving a shout out to Middlesbrough. You're right to say that they rode their luck at times, Jack. But yeah, they're in the semi-finals, had a cozy run in the draw up until this point. Now they've given themselves a chance. I mean, I don't think that these League Cups should be over two legs. That's probably a debate for another time. But they go to Stamford Bridge, really in the cup tie that might have been beyond them. And they've got something to hold on to. Michael Carrick's team have not done as well in the league this season as I think many were expecting. I think, because they reached the Championship playoffs last year, there was this belief that they would just step up and go on. That hasn't happened to the extent that you have a look at kind of the top teams in that division, and maybe that was just a bit of a too much to ask from them. But what sort of job that they've done to give themselves this chance to go to the Wembley?
Every chance, yeah. Carrick doing wonders at Middlesbrough, that's for sure. The other game was Liverpool against Fulham. Fulham took the lead in this one. It did always feel like Liverpool were going to find a way, and it did come that Nunez off the bench and Gakpo off the bench. Salah's obviously missing through AFCON for a little while now, Mark. But the depth that they possess, particularly in those forward areas, is astonishing, really.
Yeah, and that's why I fancied Liverpool to sort of be the nearest challengers to Manchester City at the start of the season. Just that strength in depth up front makes a massive difference when you can chuck on sort of two forwards like that. And if one thing's not working, you try something else. And on occasion, they might even play with four in the front line, like we've seen. And Nunez, another player that's not sort of living up to what his XG should be and is having a dry spell in terms of sort of scoring goals. He's at such a handful in that team, whether he plays off the left or through the middle, always making runs in behind, always prepared to shoot, always just a pain in the backside for defenders. And yes, he needs to sort of improve the finishing to become the absolute kind of one of the world's sort of leading forwards, and they paid a lot of money for him, Liverpool. So at some stage, I think they will want the goals to come. But he is still offering something that not many sort of teams have got. A lot of sides these days don't tend to play with somebody like Nunez through the middle. Obviously, City did go to that point with Haaland and sort of got him in the team, but. It's all about this mobile front three and interchanging positions, which Nunez can do, but he's also got the other bit to his game in terms of being like a proper number nine as well. So I think he's that if not unique, there aren't many like him, and he causes just mayhem when he's on the pitch. I do want to give a shout out to another player, and that's Curtis Jones, who scored the equalising goal. I know it's from a deflection, but he's around about 16 to 1 to make the England Euro squad. I mean, I'd seen sort of 10 and 12 to 1 and thought that was big. And someone said to me, I've seen 16s. But any double figure prices for Curtis Jones to make the Euro squad, I've got sort of two thoughts on this. One is that it's either an absolutely massive price because here's somebody that's playing for Liverpool on a regular basis in a position where England at their weakest, I would say, that there are options there. He's come through the under 21 system. He was great when England won the Euros under 21s. Seems like he's a good character would be everything that I think you'd want in a modern midfielder. So from that point of view, if I'm just looking at it, it's a massive price. If Gareth Southgate is kind of not looking at him, then that's a big failing on Southgate's part, because I haven't seen too many better midfielders than him. Obviously, you've got the obvious ones from an England point of view, but I don't see how Henderson and Phillips can be ahead of Curtis Jones at the moment. If they are, I think that that's outrageous.
Yeah, his performance levels have been really good over the last couple of weeks and months at that. We've got a bit of a small winter break coming up, Mark. Obviously confused with FA Cup replays and the semi-finals of the EFL Cup. And of course, it depends, players going off to AFCON, they might be back and only miss one game. It could well be four or five, depending on how their respective countries perform. Is this a good thing for the Premier League?
I quite like it, because everybody gets a weekend off. I think it doesn't impact on the kind of overall product of the league, because you've still got five games each week, and actually we've got them all on TV. So that's good from a kind of selfish point of view. I think that there are other things that are probably easier to do in the calendar, i.e., make the EFL Cup semi-finals one leg. That gets you back a midweek immediately, doesn't it? Where you could have sort of a break that kind of lasted a bit longer for some teams. I think FA Cup replays, I know this is a controversial viewpoint. My view is that we shouldn't have FA Cup replays, and that what you should do is that you just make it so that more of the prize money goes to the smaller teams right from the start, so that because the big teams don't actually need it, do they? Anyway, I did see one, and I have to forgive me. I think it might have been Barry Glendenning that came up with it. Certainly, he mentioned it on the Guardian podcast this week, that it should come down to the individual clubs, i.e., if both clubs say we don't want the replay, then you don't have to have a replay. And if one says, no, we want the replay rule in, then you do. I quite like that as an idea, because you get the, Crystal Palace versus Everton feels like the sort of game where both of them would have said, yeah, we'll sort this out on the night. And then you might get somebody else, lower down the pyramid. And the Bolton chairman was talking about this, that it matters quite a lot to them. But I just think FA Cup replays are fairly pointless, and that if you can sort out the financial side of it by just giving more to the smaller clubs in terms of prize money, and sort of take it off the Premier League teams that don't need it anyway, I think that's the way to do it. I mean, Nor you're a Norwich fan. You've got Bristol Rovers in a replay. I mean, I know you've got Liverpool in the next round, so you're probably not as interested anyway, as you know, going out. But would you have preferred that to have got sorted on the day
Yeah,
when you went
absolutely. I
last
mean,
week?
absolutely. I think if I were a Bristol Rovers fan, the response would be different. I think they've sold out the stadium for that game on the Tuesday night. But for us, it's sandwiched between Hull away. We then go to Bristol Rovers, and then it's another away trip. I think to Leeds United or something coming up. So it's far from ideal. Just go straight to a penalty shootout or something. Or
Yeah, extra time, penalty shootout, it's done on the night. It gives the smaller team more chance of actually progressing, because you're giving that Premier League team and or top, Championship team another bite at the cherry. So yeah, I think that if you were kind of recreating the competition now, you wouldn't have replays. I think it's from a bygone era.
If you haven't already seen it, check out the Maidstone United Twitter page. They were filming their fans during the draw, all hoping for a really big tie, and the disappointment on their faces when they were drawn to Ipswich Town. A nice trip to Portman Road away to Maidstone United. Right, let's get on to our big match for this week. It's Newcastle against Manchester City. Members Club is now available on the Racing Post app. All Members Club subscribers can now access premium news and tips anytime, anywhere. Plus, if you're not already a member, you'll get 50% off your first 3 months. If you haven't already subscribed yet and want to join the greatest club in racing, simply visit racingpost.com/subscribe. Yeah, Saturday, 5:30, Newcastle taking on Manchester City. This is probably the point in the season, Mark, where we expect Manchester City to cruise from third gear into fourth, click into fifth, and run away with things. Does it start around about here?
Interesting point on that. On the Racing Post, or in the Racing Post on Friday, we've got a special focus on that, looking at City season by season. Do they improve? Does their XG kind of go up? All of those things, really, that I suppose it's myth busting or myth proving as to whether City improve in the second half of the season. I think that this is not necessarily about sort of the time of the season in term of, but just the fact that Kevin De Bruyne is back, got a new haircut, hasn't he? Sort of
He
trying to
has,
bring the
yeah.
curtains back.
Voluptuous, yeah.
And we Haaland is either going to return or very close to a return. I mean, for all that City are a top side, De Bruyne and Haaland do take them to another level. And if they would have been fit for the whole season, I'd suspect they would have had more points anyway. But I think there's something in it that Pep Guardiola likes to leave something on the team and make sure that they're hitting top form for the second half of the campaign, probably just from a fitness point of view. He does like to rotate, and he's able to rotate due to the quality of the squad. John Stones, another one that hasn't been seen that regularly this season and was such an influential part of that treble success last season. So Stones, De Bruyne, Haaland, that's what is going to make City kick on, I think, probably more than whether they're sort of from a fitness point of view, sort of about to sort of hit their peak. So I'm expecting City to go on and win the league, I think, from here. I don't think that, well, it's Liverpool that's above them, isn't it? And Aston Villa. I don't think the lead is big enough. I suspect that Liverpool are going to give them a really good go. But City are not that far off and have got some big players to return. And they're one of the few teams that are not impacted by AFCON or the Asian Cup. If you go and sort of have a look at even Liverpool, it's not only Salah, they've got Hendo as well, haven't they? So they'll be hoping that they're still there. They and Alexander Arnold's out for a few weeks as well for them. So maybe sort of now City, if they can get everybody back, that's going to be the difference, like I say, rather than sort of Guardiola's training regime.
In terms of Newcastle, I recall sitting here last week filming this ahead of their derby against Sunderland, and I felt a bit nervous for Newcastle because of the recent performances I'd seen from them. To an extent, form goes out of the window in these derby matches, and Sunderland had I'd seen a couple of their get they run very hot and cold, but on their day they can look really good. But Newcastle, I thought, looked really professional in that and got through it in what was a must-win game. You called it. You got it right. I was a bit less optimistic for Newcastle, but they kind of ran through okay.
Yeah, men against boys. Newcastle, another team that are starting to get some players back. Not everyone, but actually the squad is looking healthier than has done in previous weeks. And yeah, I mean, I did think that it was there was a big class gap. So I don't want to overrate that success because I'm not sure about Nick Beale at Sunderland at all, I have to say. But you're absolutely right to say it was an important win for them because the fans are very much with Eddie Howe at the moment. And I'd say all of the UK sort of part of the ownership are. We don't know what the sort of Saudi area of the business thinks, and we probably never will really until they, just decide to sack him, which I'm sure will happen one day. But had they lost to Sunderland, I think it would have been a very different dynamic around the club. So it was a huge victory for them, and keeps their season alive in terms of winning a trophy. And they're one of those teams, and I support another one that's kind of got this desperation about trying to end the trophy drought. And I think it is going to sort of weigh on Newcastle until they do get a trophy over the line, which again I'm sure will happen at some stage. So they've kept the season alive. I don't think that they're going to sort of follow it up with a victory against Man City, who I don't need to tell you are quite a bit better than Sunderland.
How are we playing this, Mark, from a betting perspective?
Yeah, so I mean, Man City away from home, in just saying that, they have only won three of their last eight domestic away games. So yeah, I wouldn't be necessarily backing Manchester City at the prices. So I'm going to go for over 2.5 goals, around about 8 to 13. If you have a look at sort of City in the Premier League, 8 of their 10 away games have been over 2.5. Newcastle lost 5 of their last 6 in the Premier League. There've been 22 goals in those games. So yeah, I sort of City around about the sort of 1 to 2 mark. You know, I can leave them alone at that price, but yeah, I'm going to go for the overs.
Okay, that was our big match. Let's get through the rest of the Premier League action and, of course, Mark's thoughts on the African Cup of Nations. Yeah, it all starts Friday night this week on the telly. Burnley taking on Luton. Mark, two sides. There was a big gap between them in the Championship last season. I'm not saying there's a big gap this year, but the roles have kind of reversed this time around, you'd say. Luton going well, probably hitting above expectations somewhat. Burnley not so much. How do you see this one going?
I think Burnley are going to win around about sort of even money. And I was at the sort of what our lane last week when Burnley sort of had a mixed side out and defended and played sort of more cautiously maybe than what they had done earlier on in the season. I think that Vincent Kompany is reining it in somewhat. I like Burnley's record against the lower teams, actually. And if you, I'm going to sort of look at Burnley's record against the bottom seven, and I'm going to exclude Everton, because if you have a look at their points gained, you know, apart from the deduction, they're not sort of, you know, in that relegation fight. So the bottom third of the table, Burnley have taken 10 points from a possible 18 in matches against teams around them. They hammered Sheffield United, if you remember. They won the reverse fixture against Luton, as you mentioned earlier, were a class act in the Championship last season. So, I mean, this is a game very, very much at their level, and they haven't done anywhere near as badly as I think people sort of suggest when they've been up against teams around about them. So, yeah, I'm going to go for a Burnley win.
If you were dropped in and you were the kind of CEO of a Burnley or a Luton in January, Mark, how would you play the transfer market? Because the expectation is probably that of relegation. So do you almost future-proof yourself financially to go again in the Championship and try and get it done? Or do you throw everything at it to try and survive in the Premier League?
I think you go for loans at this stage and sort of, you know, you want good loans and sort of good characters. You don't want to be getting in sort of, you know, loanees that are going to disrupt the dressing room. But I think there has to be a realisation that you're probably going to be relegated. And so, and we've seen with the parachute payments, look at the mess Southampton looked like they were in last season, and now how well they're doing. Leeds and Leicester, what they're three of the top four, aren't they, in the Championship? I think those parachute payments give you a very good chance of going straight back up anyway. So I definitely wouldn't risk it all. I think there has to be a sense of reality of where you are. So yeah, I'd be on the more cautious side.
Very wise. Saturday, early kickoff, Chelsea taking on Fulham. Both of these teams, of course, in EFL Cup action during the week. We didn't speak much of Fulham in their performance against Liverpool, Mark. So we've got a chance to now, we've obviously discussed the woes of Chelsea. What did you make of Fulham against Liverpool?
Yeah, I mean, felt like a par score, really, to lose by one goal. Very much in the tie, giving themselves an opportunity. You always felt like if they were going to sort of get through to Wembley, it would be about sort of not being too far behind at Anfield, that they could sort of recover the job at Craven Cottage. They've had some good results this season against a bigger team, so they are capable of winning that game next week. Not saying that they will, but they're capable of winning it. They are a team that, as in, you know, I'm worried about them, I have to say, at times this season, but in more recent months, sort of, you know, that was completely wrong. They you know, beat Arsenal, didn't they, the other week as well. You look at sort of Paulinho is a top quality player that could sort of fit in anywhere, you would assume. Raul Jimenez back to, if not his best, then at least to a sort of competent level. Willian just sort of rolling back the years. Thought he was finished about 5 years ago, and he's
it's a lovely goal, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a top player, like a big threat. Yeah. Willian. So, yeah, I think they're well coached by Marco Silva. I don't actually like Marco Silva. His sort of press conferences really annoy me. He's one of those that every single week the referee is at fault. And, you know, if the referee would have done his job, then Fulham would have definitely got a better result. And, you know, I don't like that in managers when they're constantly blaming referees. So he's somebody that annoys me, but at the same time, I can admire sort of what he's done at Fulham and elsewhere, you know. And so, yeah, I think that they're well within their, well in this semi-final, and they're still going in the FA Cup as well. My fear for them in this game is that it's a quick turnaround, one day less to prepare, Wednesday, at Anfield, all of a sudden Saturday, 12:30, you're at Stamford Bridge, and Chelsea is a dirty word for Fulham. They've got an inferiority complex about their neighbours, not scored in five trips to Stamford Bridge. If you remember the reverse fixture, they were out of the game before it had even started, and Chelsea were in a shocking state at that time, and it was kind of Dr. Fulham rolled over and kind of just let Chelsea tickle their tummy. So I think Chelsea have tended to do sort of well at home in sort of recent weeks. I'm going to go for them to win 2-0 at 17-2.
Okay, great stuff. Let's move on to Sunday's action. We'll start with Everton against Villa. 2 o'clock this one, as Mark mentioned earlier, all on the television. So a weekend full of footballing action for you. Villa, obviously, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, Mark, they sort of said, you do realise Villa are second. You know, we've
Which
spoken
one? Which
about...
podcast? Name the podcast, come on.
It was The Ripple Effect, it's called, by James.
I don't know that one.
Yeah. Good listen. Okay. But, you know, we've spoken about how, you know, how good Aston Villa have been, but I think we're forgetting they are second, going remarkably well. And who's to stop them? Is it Everton?
Who's to stop? Well, I think Man City and Liverpool will stop them. In terms of this game, to an extent, yeah, I'm going to go for a draw in this one. Good news for Everton. Calvert-Lewin obviously had that red card rescinded, so he'll be able to sort of lead the Everton line. Did feel like a harsh one against Crystal Palace last Thursday in the FA Cup, and does make you wonder sort of like how that process came about. But we won't dwell on the pain of VAR. I actually don't feel like Villa are playing as well as kind of the league table suggests now. There was a time probably when they were about fourth where we weren't speaking about them enough and that they were doing better than people expected. In more recent sort of weeks, I've used that phrase quite a bit recently, but if you have, it's because of the festive period. I'm not quite sure when the days were. But if you have a look at it, you know, very late win against Burnley's 10 men. Against Brentford, it was 10 men, and they also sort of turned that game around late. I thought they deserved to lose to Manchester United. They only drew at home to Sheffield United. So I wonder if the kind of tide has turned a bit there and we're about to see sort of Villa slip down the table. Even if they do and they're in the Champions League hunt, that's still sort of exceeding expectations. So it's not negative necessarily against Aston Villa. But I do feel like Everton are a hard side to put away. I mentioned last week that I felt that when they had the dip, it was because there were so many games in a short period of time and so many hard games for them. Had a nice breather. They played on the Thursday, so it's like a 10-day break for them. I think we'll see a more aggressive Everton and one that's capable of getting a point against Villa.
Okay, great stuff. 4:30 Sunday, Manchester United against Spurs. Mark, I was I texted you, I don't know, you'd gone to the FA Cup game, and I was following along the action, and I see the goal scorer pop up. And you know when it's on like flash score and it says goal, but it's yet to say who it is. Pedro Porro pops up, the man that you've been mentioning for so many weeks on Bets Club to be backing in the goal scorer market. Had you backed him?
Didn't back him in that game. I mean, I did, and you know, I'm booting myself up the backside because, you know, I sort of said, hadn't I, look, if you back him 25, 28, 33 to 1, if you back him religiously, you're going to end up in profit this season. I had to check myself for responsible gambling reasons and say, you know, probably end up in profit. But, yeah, you're already in clover. Because it was a Friday night game, I'd sort of finished work relatively late. We we had a few fires to put out on Friday and work, and then I kind of rushed to the sort of Spurs stadium. I had to get me. I didn't have fish and chips in the end. We'd spoken about that. Ended up went for a saveloy chips and a bit of southern fried chicken instead because that was available. So I was like rushing around to meet a couple of the sort of Racing Post squad that were also going to the game. And yeah, it just sort of passed me by really. And then by and I hadn't given it a second thought until I actually when he I was I, as he was lining it up, I actually said to one of my friends, don't shoot. And no sooner as I said that, he pinged it in. And then about 5 seconds after that, my phone was pinging with people going, did you back him? Did you back him? So I know that I've had a few messages saying that people have backed him. So well done to the Pedro Porro believers. And I wouldn't be surprised if he went in again, at some stage this season. But yeah, he's been one of the stars of Tottenham season so far.
Think of the saveloys you could have bought if you'd have backed it, Mark.
Not
I
as
mean,
many
you'd
as
have
you
had a
used to be able
lifetime
to.
supply.
Not as many as you used to be able to. The
How much is
price
that
there is.
setting you back around the Spurs stadium nowadays? Chips, saveloy, and some southern fried chicken. I'm going to say, what, about 6 quid?
No, it's a bit more than that. You've lived in
Is
Norfolk
it?
for too long. Yeah, the chips are the chips are sort of the punchy bit of that. I think it was about eight or 9 quid.
Oof. Blimey. How much is a medium cod setting you back?
I think in the near the Spurs, like there's one outside the Northumberland Park sort of train station. I don't want to do it a disservice. It's double figures for sure.
Is it?
Yeah, the cod is. Yeah, I nearly went
Blimey.
doner meat, and then I was like, oh,
No.
can I?
What,
Too
doner meat from a
early.
chip shop?
Yeah,
It's not so.
it's too early in January to sort of crack open the first doner of the season, I think.
Trip to Old Trafford this weekend, Mark. How's it going to
Absolutely no idea, Jack. Manchester United. What are you going to get from Manchester United? Honestly, I couldn't tell you. What we know is that Spurs are not at full strength, but Van de Ven is back. There's a suggestion that maybe Romero's not too far away. Maddison possibly the week after. Obviously got the Timo Werner in as well to give them a bit more up front. I'm going to go for the draw because I just don't think you can trust Manchester United to put in any level of performance. And Tottenham, without Son, just don't feel quite as slick in that sort of front three. So, yeah, the draw at around about 14 to 5 felt like a big price.
Who's this Dragosin that you'll bring in? Because was he 21-year-old from Genoa? I love this kind of time of the year, Mark, because everyone acts like they know so much about these, random defenders that they've never actually watched until they've pinged on a compilation video on YouTube. But there's some excitement building around him.
There is not least because obviously Tottenham appear to have edged out Bayern Munich to sign a 21-year-old Romanian that was at Juventus. The Tottenham's raids on Italian football have been very strong in recent sort of recent windows. You had Vicario, Udogie, Bentancur, Kulusevski, Romero, they've all strengthened the team. So that's where the belief comes from. In terms of stats, I think he's only been dribbled past once this season,
Really?
and he's the best sort of win aerial duels sort of win rate in the Serie A this season. So there's a sense that he's going to become a stat signing because obviously, as I mentioned, there's a couple of good stats, but also that Tottenham like him as a player anyway, because Paratici, who is still sort of working for the club as like an advisor, has been very good on Italian football, even though he's no longer the sporting director. And then the last bit is that it appears that Ange Postecoglou has managed to persuade him to come to the club, having spoken to him and Thomas Tuchel, that he's kind of sold the dream of what they're looking to become. So I think that's where the excitement comes from.
Happy days. Well, I think you'll justify some doner meat in January with that excitement building,
There's
Mark.
no way I get to February without having doner meat and chips, but it's just, yeah, maybe not this weekend.
There we go. That's the Premier League fixtures rounded up for this game week. Let's take a look at the African Cup of Nations, Mark. Always an interesting one to look at. It kicks off on Saturday. Let me read you through the outright market. I've got a Bet365 up on screen. Now, Morocco just edging favouritism 5-1. Senegal 6s, Algeria 7s alongside Ivory Coast. Egypt 9-1, Cameroon 10-1 alongside Nigeria, Tunisia 12-1. Bigger the rest. Now, I must admit, Mark, I'm never much of a punter when it comes to AFCON. I always feel slightly out of depth. How are you approaching things this time around?
Well, it's wide open, as the betting suggests there. My first place to look was Ivory Coast because they're the hosts, and you think of the team that had Drogba and Yaya Toure. And then I looked at this current team and thought, they don't look very good to me. They are at home, so I have to respect them. Senegal have got Sadio Mane and probably the sort of most recognisable team, I would say. But the bookies not giving much away, really, with the price there. Morocco did very well at the last World Cup, of course, were semi-finalists, so you have to respect what they're doing. Egypt have got Salah as well. I thought Cameroon actually were better than I anticipated at the World Cup. So wouldn't rule them out. But the ones I landed on actually were a team that didn't qualify for the World Cup. But that's Algeria at 8-1. They beat Senegal away from home 1-0 in September, which is obviously sort of good form. They've got defenders that represent sort of clubs from Dortmund and Villarreal, Aignoury at Wolves as well, somebody that I think has done very well when I've seen him. Benacer in midfield from Milan, Aouar from Roma, Zerouki from Feyenoord has played Champions League this season. Mahrez, I don't watch the Saudi League, but apparently Mahrez's numbers in the Saudi League are as good as what you'd expect of somebody that's far too good to be playing in the Saudi leagues. So there's another one. Slimani, sort of veteran forward. I'm going to give a shout out as well to a guy called Amoura, who is 100-1 in the Golden Boot and has just really sort of piqued my interest in the last 24 hours or so, because he plays for Union in Belgium, who are owned by sort of Tony Bloom, and so they've been using data to sign their players, and he hasn't been there for one season yet. He's absolutely shooting the lights out, and he's already been linked with much bigger teams around Europe. 23 years old, can play as a striker or as a winger. His shot volume is insane. Like, he averages per 90 minutes, it's over 5 shots per game. Now, if you think Darwin Núñez is not even at 5 shots per game,
wow,
that gives you a kind of level as to what we're looking at, just in terms of how, you could say, selfish, you could say direct, confident he is. And then from a shots on target point of view, again, it's more than 2 shots on target per game, per 90 minutes, which I think is a very interesting statistic again. Because, someone like Núñez, again, is like, in terms of Premier League, if you want to put it to Premier League, he's not at 2. And that's somebody that shoots an awful lot. 13 goals in 15 games in the Belgian League this season. So, yeah, he I think it's 13 and 14 maybe in the league. And then he's got another one in the cup. He scored in European competition as well. So he just felt like somebody at 100-1. That might be worth a little poke each way.
A reminder on his
Mohamed name. Mohamed Amoura, Amoura.
Okay, 100-1.
And given our low score in AFCON, you might only need to score 2 goals to get a place. But yeah, they've got a nice group, Algeria as well. I expect them to go reasonably sort of deep in the competition if I'm putting them up to win it. Yeah, so I mean, look, if you want a winter warmer and you don't fancy backing anything sort of too short, why not have a little go on 100-1 shot?
100-1 Pope. Love it, Mark. Let's get on to some of your best bets. And before that, Dan Childs with the EFL. If you want some free football bets this season, we've got you covered. Simply head to racingpost.com/freebets and there you'll find over £200 worth of them for you to use this season. That's racingpost.com/freebets. Yeah, always a busy time of the year for EFL clubs. Of course, we've had FA Cup action recently, back to domestic duties this time around. And January is always a really intriguing month, isn't it, Dan? Because, you know, teams can really fluctuate during this time. Loan deals are always interesting. Teams can strengthen, or you've had players that have been doing really well and then they start to get recalled by clubs. Morecambe are the team in focus this week. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Jack, I mean, January can be a real positive if you get, you know, some good players in, or it can be a negative. And as you mentioned with the loan situation, Morecambe have had 5 loanees and they've all gone back. 3 of them have gone back in the last week. And I think it's going to massively affect them. I mean, they've actually, since Derek Adams left in November, went to Ross County, went to work in Scotland. They've only won one of their 8 games under Jed Brannan. And so there's been a bit of a drop off. You kind of wonder why Derek Adams left, and maybe he kind of knew what was going to be happening there, you know, with the transfer situation. Because as I said, 5 loanees have left. The 3 this week are all big players. Tom Bloxon, the winger who's gone back to Shrewsbury. Eli King, midfielder, has been getting a lot of good reviews, has gone back to Cardiff. And Michael Mellon, the big one, he's got 13 league goals for Morecambe this season, has gone back to Burnley. And that is a massive, massive blow for a club like Morecambe. Don't operate with a massive squad. As I've mentioned, their form has dipped anyway. And they were kind of going for sort of playoffs. They've dropped down. They're probably not going to be sucked into relegation. They're 15 points above the bottom 2. But you kind of fear for them, certainly in the next couple of months. And if you're looking for a team, you know, in the short term, I would suggest to oppose in League 2, Morecambe will be high on the list.
Yeah, when you're a club desperately trying to hold on to players, January feels like an eternity, doesn't it? Right, let's get on to the teams that you'll be backing this weekend. Dan, who's your first pick?
Yeah, going to go with Millwall drawing a bet at home to Middlesbrough. A little bit of a, you know, kind of, it might be like an after Lord Mayor show sort of situation for Middlesbrough. We've had that fantastic night against Chelsea, getting the 1-0 win in the first leg of the EFL Cup semi-final. They did that against all the odds, really. I mean, Chelsea had a lot of players out, but as we know, they've got a massive squad. Middlesbrough had 11 players out and managed to get the win. I think they had about 26% possession and soaked up a lot of Chelsea attacks. But they lost 2 players to injury in the first 20 minutes of that game as well. Latte Lath went off injured for them. Alex Bangura, the left back, went off injured as well. They have got a couple of players that were cup tied that are going to come back into contention, but you're still looking at Middlesbrough being without 7 injured players and 3 players that are on various international duties at the Asia Cup and the Africa Cup of Nations. So when you've got those amount of absentees, you're probably going to be feeling a bit leggy as well and a bit of a come down mentally after such a massive night against Chelsea. I think they're a team that you would look at opposing. And you look at the other side of the coin, Millwall, under Joe Edwards, they're starting to really respond to him now. They've won their last 3 championship games. Had a narrow 3-2 defeat at home to Leicester in the FA Cup 3rd round. But looking at the stats for that game, looks like Millwall played pretty well in that one as well. So they're up against Millwall, as I said, on the up now, pushing towards mid-table. I just think this is going to be a tricky game for Middlesbrough. And Millwall around evens on the draw, I bet, looks a good price to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the first pick. Millwall draw, no bet. Who's next?
Drop down to League One now. Peterborough going for promotion away to Charlton. I like the look of Peterborough here, a shade of odds against to get the win. These got the 2 teams that have the feel of going in different directions at the moment. Charlton, no win in 7 league games. Their playoff hopes are really fading fast. They drew 3-3 at Port Vale. Fancied them last weekend. Port Vale got lots and lots of injuries. Conceded a late equaliser there and drew the game. I don't fancy them this week against Peterborough, who are unbeaten in 9 league games. I mean, the most recent of them was when they come from behind and got a brilliant 3-2 win away to Derby. They're going great guns at the moment. Peter Chioso's a blow. He's been recalled. Another loanee that's been recalled has gone back to Rotherham, the right back. But I still think, I look at their squad, they've got a really strong squad, still keeping hold of players like Mason Clark, you know, a big player for them. I just think they've got lots going forward and I fancy them to win at the Valley.
Yeah, always an exciting team to watch. Who's the third selection for this week, Dan?
Drop into League 2, going to go with MK Dons, just a straight win away to Tranmere. MK Dons, 8th in League 2, dropped out of the playoffs when they lost sort of a bit of a surprise defeat, 3-0 away to Doncaster. Nothing really went right at the start for them in that game. They were 2-0 down after 15 minutes. I wouldn't give up on them, though. They had won their previous four matches. I still think there's a decent chance they'll make the playoffs. And it's kind of good timing when they're going to Tranmere. Tranmere have done a lot better under Nigel Adkins. But they're another club that's been hurt by the return of one of their key loanees. Robbie Apter, who's been getting rave reviews on the wing for them, has gone back to Blackpool. Their first game without him, they played at Barrow last weekend, lost 1-0. Didn't sound like they created many chances at all in that game, Tranmere. I know Barrow away is a really tough game. Barrow haven't lost the home game this season, but it does look like Tranmere are carrying less of a threat right now. MK Dons, for me, those odds, around 6-4 to win away, looks a good bet.
Yeah, some strong sounding selections there. Millwall, Draw No Bet, Peterborough and MK Dons, the selections for Dan. Dax, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Jack.
Well, there were some all winners for Mark last week. Let's try and replicate that this time around. Mark, we shall start with a bet builder. It comes in the Newcastle City game.
Yes, it does. So we're going for both teams to score. Man City have only got two away clean sheets in the Premier League all season, but have obviously got a tremendous amount of firepower. One of those players that actually is starting to sort of find his shooting boots and was the hero, of course, of the Champions League final last season was Rodri. And I'm backing him to have over 1.5 shots in 7 of his last 9 Premier League games. He's had over 1.5 shots. And then Bruno Guimaraes, who's becoming very much the fans' favourite, I think, from a bet builder point of view. I'm backing him to be carded. He's been booked in each of his last 5 games and in both matches against Manchester City this season. So both teams to score, Rodri over 1.5 shots, Guimaraes to be carded, and that comes in around about 7-1.
Lovely stuff. We had a 7-2 winner with the treble last week. We go again this time around. Who are we putting in it?
Close your ears, Jack. Hull to beat Norwich. Norwich lost 8 of their last 12 away games. And I think Rossini are doing a very good job at Hull. Need to get this on by Friday night because two of the teams are playing on Friday for Hull. And also Burnley to beat Luton. Burnley got a solid record against the poorer teams in the division. There's no doubt that Luton, for all that they've done well this season, are one of the worst sides. And then Chelsea to beat Fulham, two reasons. One, I think it's a quick turnaround for Fulham from the game on Wednesday at Anfield, and they do seem to have an inferiority complex when it comes to playing their local neighbours. So it's Hull to beat Norwich, Burnley to beat Luton, and Chelsea to beat Fulham. That comes in at around about 11-2.
7-2 winner last week, 11-2 this time around. Reminder, that needs to be placed before Friday night. And the nap, where you shall end things with your best bet this week, Mark.
Yep, so if you look at Burnley's record against those sort of lower sides, if you like, in the division, they've beaten Fulham away from home, they've drawn at Nottingham Forest, they won at Luton, they beat Sheffield United 5-0 at home. I think that when they're in their own company, if you see what I've done there, when they're among the teams at their level, they're actually not this sort of tailed off team. It's a massive game for Burnley, one that they'll feel they need to win against Luton. I think it's one that they can win as well. So I'm going for sort of a home win at Turf Moor for Burnley.
There we go. Mark, thanks very much. Big thanks to Dan Charles as well for his insight on the EFL. We'll be back next week for another episode of Mark Langdon's Bets Club. Until then, bet responsibly and take care. Bye-bye.